Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is a multinational comedian and actor who brings a distinct charm wherever they go. Having appeared in every other decent TV show out of the US, please welcome Jennifer Marsala.
Hello, hi. I'm so happy to see you.
It's lovely to catch up. Yeah. I mean, like a few of my guests recently, the last time I saw you in person was running around frantically at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. So it's lovely to be back in our respective homes, routines, lives.
Yes, having had a full night's sleep, finally.
Yeah. You know what was scary this year, actually? Made the mistake of looking at, you know, the way Apple tracks your steps and all sorts of things on your phone these days. And obviously, I've got data for years from being an Apple convert. Turns out every Fringe, I sleep on average 1 hour less, and I do like nearly double the steps. So it was like, the exhaustion is right there.
I know, exactly. Although I think I sleep many hours less, but I triple my steps when I'm at Fringe. And I feel like a combination.
Okay, it's not a competition, Jen.
Well, no, listen to me. I'm much healthier. No. I think I feel like, on the one hand, so unhealthy when I'm at the Fringe, and then on the other hand, in the best shape of my life when I'm at Fringe from all of the walking. But you counter it by eating every meal off a food truck. It balances, I think.
This is true. And so now you're back home, you're in what? Sounds like a lovely relationship. But before we get into any of that, you've got a story from the past now.
Yeah. So I got married very young. I married sort of a high school sweetheart. And so subsequently, I was divorced very, very young. I was divorced before most of my friends were even married, which was kind of an interesting place to be in your life. And I think we got together so young that we didn't know each other outside of the context of things like school, which is a very weird place to have a relationship. We went to high school, then acting conservatory together, and we got out and I said to him, hey, I read this amazing book. You need to read it. And he said to me, Jen, you know, I don't read books. And I didn't know he didn't read books. In that moment, I thought, oh no, I'm going to get a divorce. Like, it all of a sudden occurred to me that, like, I didn't know this thing that felt like a really massive thing. Like, it represented so many other things to me about this person, like about not being curious about anything or learning anything. And I didn't know any of those things because when we met, he did read books, but they were all assigned. And so it was just sort of a moment where I sort of, everything became really clear to me. A relationship that had sort of started as a kid sort of was put through a prism of being an adult. And I thought, oh, I don't actually think that I can grow with this person. And we didn't get divorced for, like, you know, a year or two later. But in that moment, I, for the first time, I thought, oh, the possibility exists that this relationship is not going to stand the test of time.
Yes.
So,
oh, bless you. I can see it because I think when we're that age, we want to feel grown up. You know, sometimes we convince ourselves and think sort of the older you get, the more you look back on and you're like, I really thought I was an adult back then. And, you know, I think that occurs for much of our life in the same way, you know, it's not just aging, it's also falling in love that sometimes, you know, we think like, oh my God, this is it. And then maybe you get into another relationship and you're like, no, this one paled in comparison.
100%. And I remember falling in that love, you know, like I remember meeting him and I think at that age, you know, a teenager, like 17, 18 or whatever, you think, well, I don't know why adults make this look so complicated. I've figured it out. You know what I mean? Like you think like, oh, adults, they spend so much time trying to find the person that they're meant to be with. But I'm so smart and clever. I've already sorted it out. Done. Checked it off. You know what I mean? Like, life partner. Done. Sorted. God, the audacity of you.
And then to you realizing that maybe I've bet on the wrong horse here.
100%. All in that moment with the books. I mean, they represented so much more to me, right? I think I was just like really, I thought I'd figured it all out. And in that moment, I was like, oh, I don't think I figured this out. I think
But that's scary. I don't know this person as well as I thought. And you're realizing priorities.
It's so weird that that was new information to me. Jen, you know I don't read books. And I just thought, that's such a weird statement to make. You know what I mean? Like, just, that's like saying, you know I don't speak Chinese. That makes sense. Like, currently I don't speak Chinese, but you know I don't read books. It just feels like, you know, you could pick one up right this second.
Yeah, well, without wanting to project on it too much, just that particular phrasing, I agree. There's something there that sort of is like a flash forward of your life together, of like cut to you, you know, in a restaurant and he's rude to the waiter and you're like, why did you do that? And he's like, you know, I hate people. Like, what is that attitude?
Well, yeah, what else don't I know? I just thought, oh, there's a lot I don't know. And there's a lot I don't know.
And so what was the process then of getting to the point where the divorce happens?
You know, it's interesting because that's not, in the end, obviously the reason why we got divorced, but it was just that, like, opened the door to so many things that said we were growing in different directions. The real reason that we ended up getting divorced was he wanted kids. And I realized that I actually didn't think I ever wanted kids. We were kids ourselves, you know what I mean? But because we were kids, we had never really had that conversation. Just the way we were growing, I was like, you know, I think actually it's not what I want. And he really saw that for his life. So in the end, that is why we split up. But he wanted just a different life than I wanted, and has since gotten it. You know, remarried, has kids, has the life that he wants, and I went in a different direction. The thing that was scary is when we got divorced, I realized I had never not either lived with my parents or him. You know, for the first time in my life, I was like, oh, I've got to be on my own. I've got to date. I've got to, like, I don't even know what it feels like to be a human being on my own, let alone like a human being dating on my own. Like, it was just the most overwhelming feeling, I think, that I've ever had was deciding to get divorced, because I was leaping into a complete unknown.
Yeah. And that admission of, I didn't have it all figured out. And now I've got the monumental task of trying to reach that feeling that it is figured out once more, and maybe you won't. You know, Otsuka Okatsuka has a bit about this where she talks about how, you know, we sort of frame married couples as the great adults of life. And in fact, you know, there's something ironically childish there about two people being like, I want to spend every moment with you, and we'll live together, and we'll share meals, and maybe we'll share clothes. She's like, it's actually kind of like how toddlers act. You know, and then she says that people ask her about marriage and what does it feel like? And she's like, comfy clothes. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Marriage is comfy clothes and, you know, always being responsible for what someone else wants to have for dinner. That's really what marriage is. You know what I mean? Like, you never just think about yourself anymore. Sometimes when I'm just on my own, I think, oh, the only thing that matters is what I want to have.
And yet I do find there to be something reassuring about that, right? That it can, you know, still, like Otsuka describes, it still can be framed as this kind of point that you get to, and then a lot is figured out and you've sort of progressed to a new version of that. And in reality, out of everyone I interview, it's the married people that chat to me before the show, and they're like, God, I hope I have enough to say. And I'm like, I thought you were meant to have the answers for me. What is this?
Yeah, because I think I don't know, I'm very reassured by the routine of marriage. Mm-hmm. For me, that feels like, you know, and I think it's partially because what I do for work is so uncertain and so different all the time. I'm very comforted by the idea of like coming home to safety and comfort and familiarity and the same. That to me feels just like, oh, how great, sweatpants and the person who, like, you know, you sort of let it all hang out around, that feels like real bliss to me. So I guess it's not all fireworks, but God, the other part is really nice.
That's lovely. I also feel like, do I have elements of that with my cat? So maybe I've solved it.
I think you might be, maybe honestly. I found my person. I think we figured it out for you, Bobby. I think, you know, that's all sorted. You've achieved what everybody is after.
Self-actualization, just got to come. But tell me, in terms of offspring, are we including her in that clunky segue there? You mentioned about that realization of not wanting to have kids. Now, yeah. I don't believe women should have to explain their perspective on that.
But I will. You know, I think I was one of the rare Well, maybe it's not that rare. I mean, I always knew I didn't want children. As a child, I remember having friends who would want to play house, and I'd always be putting my baby dolls up for adoption. I just thought, like, let's play career, you know? And then I got into a relationship. We were kids, and it didn't occur to me to talk about whether or not we'd eventually want kids, because that wasn't even part of the equation. Like, we were kids. Like, we were just trying to get on with our lives and move out and, you know, become adult. When it finally came up, I thought, much like, you know, I don't read books, I thought, you know, I don't want kids. And then I was like, oh, maybe he doesn't know I don't want kids. And I think, honestly, it's probably because what I saw as a child from my mom, I think probably was that when you have a kid, being a mom becomes your whole identity. And I wanted an identity that was just my own identity. And I definitely, as an adult who can look at it in a more nuanced way, don't think that that's the case. I think you can carve out whatever kind of life you want in whatever kind of way you choose to do it. I think for me, just what was modeled as a kid was like, you give up everything else. At 5, we had an assignment, and it was to say what we wanted to be when we grew up. And I went home and I asked my mom what she had wanted to be when she grew up. And she said, a ballerina. And I said, oh, why didn't you become a ballerina? And she said, well, because I had you. And I think she meant it in a nice way, you know, because I became a mom, and that was what I wanted instead. What I heard as a 5-year-old was that when you have a baby, it stops you from becoming a ballerina, which was like the most glamorous job I could think of having as a 5-year-old. And so I decided I'll never be a mom. I would much rather be a ballerina. I think that's probably where the root of it was. But it just became something that I thought, you know, I don't think that that's for me. I think I need to, you know, be the ballerina. It's a moment that came about in childhood that I think stayed with me. And then I think I just thought, well, I don't think having a family is for me. I have so many friends that have kids, and I know that that's not the case as an adult, but it just became the thing where I was like, I have to focus on other things, and I don't think it's going to be motherhood for me.
Yeah. No, fair. It's really interesting to hear that perspective. And you know what you described there from your mum? That's a lot to put on a child, even accidentally. You know, this idea that she had a dream and then you're here instead. Like, of course you're going to interpret it in that way. And yeah, I find it interesting. That's why I was even conscious of kind of asking you there, because there is this expectation, right, that you have kids unless you decide otherwise. And I don't like that assumption any more than I like assumptions of, you know, everyone gets married unless they decide not to, or unless it doesn't work out and they decide never again, or everyone's straight unless they share with the world that turns out I'm not. There's a lot of these assumptions we have around relationships, and I really think what makes good relationships, if I've learned anything from this show, is the distinct ways in which they form to suit the people in them. Those kind of niche organic things are often what kind of really make people's connection.
So I'm married now, I'm remarried. We met on a blind date very shortly after I got divorced. And I was in this period where all I wanted to do was date and experience what it was like to date. And I think because I was set up on a blind date with my husband, if I had seen him on paper, you know what I mean? If I'd seen all the things, I 100% would never have gone on that blind date, because I think I had this vision of what life was going to be like, right? Like, and he wouldn't be the person that I would choose. And I also wasn't looking to get married. You know, I was in that phase where I was like, I've been married. You know what I mean? Like, the expectations had changed for me. And so it's a very weird time to meet someone going in without any expectations. I think it made all the difference, because it was the first time in my life I didn't have any expectations around anything, except I hoped that, you know, I would get dinner. I was a starving actor at the time. I was like, dinner is my only expectation. That feels like a pretty fair thing.
I think there's something to that, to setting a low bar, right? Yes. You know, we'd absolutely need expectations in terms of how we should be treated. But yeah, we don't know who we're going to turn up and meet. And yeah, that's probably a million miles more practical than like, well, they could be the one.
Yes, or a list of all the things that I would have wanted. I mean, honestly, if I had had a list of all the things that I would have wanted just on paper, the person who I'm married to now, who I adore, didn't have any of the things that were on the list, really. And so it is strange that that's like if I was writing a prescription for myself of like the perfect husband and the perfect relationship, I would have gotten it so completely wrong. I mean, I did the first time. And then we've just talked a lot about me not wanting kids. And I went on this blind date with my now husband, and I found out he has two kids. And so I'm a stepmom. Like I became a stepmom. I mean, I've spent the last years of my life raising his children, like helping raise his children. It was an identity shift for me of getting something that I had always said that I didn't want. I actively left a marriage to avoid. And so it's been interesting how fulfilling in a weird way it's been for me to become a stepmom instead of like a biological mom, and how I've been able to like, I don't know, make that my own in a way that I don't think I would have seen the possibility to do that if I'd had my own children. But having stepchildren, I think like, oh, there's no role. There's nobody knows anything about how to be a stepmother. You know what I mean? It's just like the trope of evil stepmom. And as long as you do better than that, you're golden. Like you're good. And so,
yeah, very easy expectations to live up to.
Such a low bar. Just don't be evil. And so I've achieved it. I've gone beyond it. Now being a stepmom is like a real joy.
Now at least one of them likes me.
I got really lucky. I have great stepkids, and they are both lovely people, and I have great relationships with them. And it's become a role that I really love and enjoy, and I never would have expected that. That's like why on paper, I don't know, the blind date. What a terrific method to meet somebody.
Yeah. But no, I want to pause on that because I think there really is something there of like having no expectations and really finding your own way. Because whilst I don't expect people are going to start, you know, setting out in life and thinking, okay, my dream is to become a stepmom, I think there's something about the reality of like, we don't always get what we expect. But sometimes, you know, maybe that was the happy medium for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think 100%. I mean, there was a lot of things I didn't expect. My friend who set me up on the blind date was, my husband's a television writer. And my friend was running a show and wanted to cast me in the show and had brought my picture in. Said, I want to put this actress in this show. And it came about that he thought, well, I'm going to set her up with this writer on the show on a date. And he said, will you go on a date with this writer on the show? And I said, no, I don't want to go on a blind date. I don't know anything about him. And also, you know, this is so awkward if I'm working on this show and then I date this writer on the show. Like, it just seems like a recipe for disaster. And he said, well, I don't think it would be like that. And I said, tell me one thing about him that would make me want to go on this date. And he said, he's British. And I went, oh, darn, that's the one thing. That's the one thing that would make me want to go on this date. Because, you know, we all love an accent here in America. And so,
yeah, it's like, I'm saying nothing. Don't bring me into it.
I said, I'll go on this date. And I wouldn't have if I'd known anything about him. He was 16 years older than me. He has two kids.
Yeah. You know, and I think there's two parts to that, right? We don't know who our person is. You know, right. We can listen to as many dating podcasts as we want. There is no perfect formula. And then on top of that, you know, sometimes a lot of the time we're in patterns. I don't really believe in the idea of having a type. Partly because a lot of the time when you boil it down, your type is people like your ex. What's that definition of insanity people use? Like trying the same thing over and over again and expecting different results?
100%. That's what I always tell my friends. I was like, oh, your type has worked out so well before, you know? I mean, let's switch it up because the type doesn't seem to be working. I 100% agree. I think that, you know, taking the list that I had, everybody has, I think, at least mentally, like a checklist, aside from things that are values, like being willing to be flexible about some of the less fundamental things. That's kind of what I learned from that.
Yeah, I think maybe prioritizing is what we're getting at here. And also, you've got me thinking there about, you know, I would be very open to blind dates, and I'm kind of arguably more open to like assisted marriages than some people would be. And that's partly cultural, that there's a sort of informal tradition in Ireland. Well, you know, more formal historically, but sort of informal these days, of, you know, introducing people and sort of families coming together and sort of trying to set people up. And, you know, matchmaking is still very much an industry here. So maybe I'm culturally open to it, but I also, you know, it is that self-awareness piece of I don't trust myself. I don't trust myself to make these choices. That has not always gone well. So maybe I do hand the baton over to someone else and be like, okay, you give it up.
I mean, at the very least, I think that what will happen is you'll see maybe something that you don't see that other people see that might be something that's interesting to you or something that you thought like, oh, I never thought a person like this would be somebody who's super appealing to me. You know, my husband is a real introvert. He's a writer. I'm such an extrovert. I never thought that that would be like a good match. It's fantastic. You know what I mean? Like we complement each other in a lot of ways where if I was looking, I would have been like definitely 100% not what I would have expected. I think that the tradition of
I love that your storytelling about your husband is equal parts. He's so wonderful. I'm so grateful for him. He's got a lot of traits I wasn't sure about.
It's funny because when we first met and we've started talking about how unlikely it was that we had somehow found each other. If we hadn't been introduced, we definitely wouldn't have, because I wouldn't have been looking for someone like him. And you wouldn't have been looking for someone like me, frankly. You know, I mean, there were a lot of things about me that weren't things that I think he would have been looking for.
Yeah, beautiful, certainly. Fun, successful, honestly.
So deal breakers. I mean, definitely wouldn't have been looking for somebody who was actively running away from children. We were both equally surprised when we were like, are you the person? I have a friend who's a matchmaker, and I'm fascinated. I constantly make her talk to me about it, about what people are looking for and what people end up getting and what makes them happy. Because I think oftentimes she will say the things that people say they're looking for when they find the person they end up with are not the things that were the most important. I just think it's so interesting that no matter how well we think we know ourselves, like we always have that sort of slight inability to gauge what maybe is best for us.
Oh,
good,
yeah.
For us? And I don't know.
Maybe there's an argument for, can we even be objective on that sometimes? You know, in the same way people kind of make all sorts of odd changes in their life, and maybe they make sense at the time, but they don't make sense in the long term. And then you look at, on them as a friend or a family member, and you're like, what are we doing over there?
Yeah, it's easier to be objective from the outside, I suppose. I guess you can only be objective from the outside.
Yeah.
But and well, I'm pro matchmaking.
Good. Yeah, me too. And I also have a weird version of what you're describing here from the other side, where I've noticed a real trend with me dating people, which is only seeming to increase. So you tell me what we do about this.
Okay.
Where some people are, but some people are not sure about me initially. And maybe it is that I wasn't the person that they had in mind, or, you know, maybe the type of relationship that I would bring to them isn't kind of what they had envisioned. And then that is what it is. And then one of two things often happens from there, that either they want to really stay in my life as friends. And then if that doesn't work out, it's like a breakup. It's this massive thing then that they want, that then, you know, is really weird to handle. Because I'm like, we weren't together. This is a lot of emotion. You know, I don't know if it's that I'm novel or that they love, you know, a lot of people will talk to me about their feelings and find me to be supportive. And that's a lovely trait, but it's not one that I want someone that I met on an app to become reliant on. They've decided they don't want to be with me, but I do have to stay in their life forever as a supportive friend. That's pressure. Or the other side of it is it doesn't work out at the time, and then they circle back to me in, you know, 6 months, a year. And maybe they've met other people who treat them worse in the dating pool, and they're like, yeah, that's not who I was expecting, but, you know, he was nice to me.
Yeah.
So maybe I go back there. By which time...
I mean, do you think a circle back is ever successful? Like, do you think a circle back is somebody going, I don't think I was ready for this person at the time. I think my priorities have become clearer to me, and I really passed up on something that I think was great. Or do you always feel, because you said by that time you've probably moved on, do you feel like the initial sort of like brush past or rejection or whatever that feels like to you is the thing that makes you go, well, that person is obviously not my person.
Well, here's the thing. I might have a firmer perspective on this than some people. Yeah, I don't know about it. You know, maybe the jury's out because I've never really gone there and taken somebody up on it. But I guess I'd view it in a similar skeptical way as when someone has a breakup and they get back together. You know, I really believe the first breakup is the hardest one. And then after that, it's a lot easier. And, you know, maybe that's my abandonment stuff. But I don't know if it's the same after the first breakup. And I don't, that's not without seeing that happen, you know, for me or for people around me. And so maybe I have a similar thing where when they've decided you won't work out once and they want to sort of reconsider, I'm sort of like, oh, I think you made your decision and I'm not here, you know. I somewhat resent being like, oh yes, I'm still on the sub for you. You pick me back up whenever you want. And then, you know, who knows
why didn't you see why didn't you see how great I was the first time around?
Ready for this relationship now.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think it's valid. It's 100% valid to feel that. One of the things that you said was that you feel like you don't think you're what they expect. I mean, has that been expressed to you, or you feel like that's something that you've sort of invented, that idea of the what their expectation is before they meet you and then they meet you? Or
yeah, I think there might be a certain element of me kind of filling in the gaps there, but there's definitely been suggestions of it in terms of the way people interact with me when they meet me in a dating scenario. Like, they will express, like, essentially me being unexpected, or, you know, when people say things like, you're really interesting, and you feel slightly like, am I an exhibit? What does that mean? Am I a piece of curious art?
Surely being interesting is like a wonderful thing, no?
Yeah, no, but I think sometimes it feels like novelty, and maybe that's part of the like, oh, you're really cool. I can like express myself to you and you don't judge me and you really listen and you're kind of quirky, aren't you? Like, it's a lot of that stuff. And maybe that's why some of them want me to stay in their life forever as their friend / emotional psychic. You know,
you think you get shifted to that place of like, oh, this is a really good, interesting person. I will be better as friend. What a good friend.
In fact, this is you're the right person to talk to, you know, with your career in acting. Am I just the funny best friend? Is that what it is?
I mean, listen,
I don't get a plot of my own.
I
do get loads of parts.
Yeah, exactly. Funny best friend, very in demand. Funny best friend. You'll always be getting calls for the funny best friend. Yeah, obviously, like, being shifted to that category consistently is no fun. And then becoming a friendship and then the friendship ending and feeling like a breakup can't be much fun either. I do think there's something that's nice about, like, you know, if you meet people and they're interesting and they don't feel like your person. I love friendship. I think friendship is the most important thing. And I love to collect, like, a community of friends, and you meet people and you go like, you're maybe not my person, but you have to be in my life because you're so great and interesting and lovely and amazing. So I don't know. Is it everything about finding your person? I don't know.
No, like, no, look, I'm joking around here, but really, like, I love friendships. And in my experience, people that are your friends tend to, and I don't think this is just my statistics, sticking your life for longer.
Yeah. And maybe those are the people you should be having set you up on blind dates.
That would be funny. I get friend zoned and I'm like, on one condition, you have to now find me the person.
Yes, I will be your friend. Friend zone, no problem. But this, I have to tell you, you have to set me up on at least 2 blind dates.
Yeah, maybe that's the way it balances out. Okay, I will be here to talk through your emotions, but I have a task for you.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe, you know what, maybe we've solved it. But no, look, I mean, the serious side of this, or where I'm at the moment, is I'm sort of back to taking a break from it all. I've realized that I don't really know what I'm looking for, and I think there's some stuff I need to work on personally in terms of kind of building more trust with people. And so I actually really do just want to focus on my friendships. And I guess one thing you've reminded me of there is maybe some of the times when it goes towards a friend direction and then it doesn't work out, I can find myself realizing, would I have been friends with you? And the answer might be no. And so I think that really speaks to readjusting my expectations, because maybe I've prioritized friends for so long and that really works and I have no regrets there. But maybe, you know, my standards aren't what I thought they were in relationships. Mm. I'm like, oh, maybe this is good enough because it's not bad. Maybe I can do better than that.
Yeah, I think you can definitely do better than that. I mean, definitely do better than good enough because it's not bad. And I think, you know, it sounds like you're in this place in your life where you're being really introspective about what you need and want. And I think all of that is wonderful. And I think sometimes in the not, I mean, for me, and I know for a lot of people that I've talked to, not actively looking is the time when you find something amazing, because you don't have that list that's like, and it has to check all these things, you know? It's like, oh, well, I'm not even looking. I don't even have my list out. Maybe I'll stumble onto something really wonderful.
Yeah. And that's the other side of what I often notice about these conversations with married people is that a lot of the time the dude in the relationship is like, yeah, I kind of was focused on my career and I wasn't really sure about kind of relationship stuff. I was just hanging with my buddies. And then, you know, she was just there. She kept showing up. And I was like, you know what, maybe you. So honestly, maybe the answer is do less.
Yeah, do less. I don't know. I mean, who knows what the answer is? You could find your person in the grocery store, or you could find your person through one of these friends that will set you up. But, you know, I think for now you have the time and the space to focus on other things. And you get to be at home with a fabulous cat, which, I mean, is basically marriage.
Honestly, I'm proud of, I love where I live geographically and specifically this home. I really am close to my flatmate and my cat and a lot of people. I'd say even the majority of people with the Dublin housing market do not like where they live, may have real turbulent experiences with who they live with. And so honestly, if that's where I'm banked at, I'll take it. That'll keep me going for a good long while. And yeah. We do a weekly shop together now. It's not domestic.
Oh my gosh, it is domestic. You do the weekly shop?
We do an online shop. It arrives on Monday and I stay home to take the shopping in. And I never feel more like a housewife than in that moment where I'm waiting for the Tesco delivery. And I'm like, maybe I'll do some cleaning while I'm sat here.
God, you sound like the best roommate ever. You sound like you're a real catch, Bobby. Don't let him go.
I think there we go. There's some answers. But no, as much as we joke about these things, you know, dating is chaos and you've got to laugh. And yeah, I don't think dudes should just be sitting around waiting for women to sidle up next to them either. We all need to pull out. So on that note, now's your chance for a bit of advice. So, as if you haven't already given so much, we each need to choose a rule of the game. So something you try and live by in dating or relationships. And don't say communication. Everyone wants to say that one.
I know everyone wants to say that. The thing is, well, no, I mean, listen, we didn't get into this, but I'm such a fan of couples therapy. And I'm such a fan of couples therapy. I'm such a fan of going before there's problems so that you know how to deal with problems. And we went really early on. Like we went way before we were married to couples therapy, because I thought, oh, well, when things get bad, we need to know how to deal with that. And in the meantime, we'll just really be able to talk about how good things are. So obviously communication is all a part of that. But I think I always try, I mean, this is such a cheesy one, and maybe it's because I live in Los Angeles, but to practice gratitude for being in a really wonderful relationship. And I often find, like, if there's something that isn't ideal, me just looking at all of the positive things in my relationship and about that person is really effective. Because I think a lot of the times we can get so caught up in like the things that are sort of little, sort of like things that bug you or irritants or whatever. But every day I try to wake up and say, I'm with someone who is so kind and has so much integrity and makes me laugh and is such a good human being. And I think focusing on positives about the person that you're with instead of things that bug you is such a good practice just anyway in your life, but I think has generally made me happier. And I guess the other thing that I would say is I always try to think of doing things that I know would make him happy. And he always tries to think of things that would make me happy. And just invariably, you feel really thought of and really considered and really taken care of And I know that's something that both partners have to do, but I do know it's a thing that one person can start doing and it can be infectious. I think those things are something that can change the whole sort of atmosphere in a relationship. Just thinking like, how can I make your day a little bit better and you'll do the same for me? I don't know. Is that advice?
That is lovely, is what that is. You know, if you ever are looking for a third, you just let me know. Honestly, ready-made, lovely relationship right there. That's great. And fair play to you as well on the couples therapy. I'm a super big believer in that. And in particular, going before the things arise, because I know enough couples therapists from my mental health work. And, you know, one of the things that they often will say to me is it can be really wearing that people come in at the 11th hour and try and put it literally on their door and say, okay, what do you got to say? How are you going to fix all this? And there are a lot of times when it can't be fixed, but there's also a lot of times when it can. But the thing that really can drain you in that profession is all the people that it could have been fixed earlier. But maybe not now. Maybe there's too much water under the bridge.
100%. I went at the end of my first marriage. And the consensus was people go years too late. And I thought, I'm not going to let that happen the next time a relationship's really important to me. And there's so many things to negotiate early in a relationship. I don't mean on your third date, go to therapy. But I mean, as soon as you know that this is a person that you're going to build your life with or a life with for however long you're going to do that. And I think, you know, we had to negotiate learning how to fight with each other so we could all have the same strategy for fighting and know what's fair and off limits or not fair. Like, there's just things that are so useful. It's so useful. I'm such an advocate for it. Go when you still really like each other.
Honestly, so maybe I go now. Maybe I go before the relationship.
Make all of your first dates.
Here's this hypothetical battling with. Really, really having a lot of arguments with them right now. And I guess my rule of the game would be around emotional intelligence. And, you know, I was reminded about it, you know, talking to you there and talking about my household and, you know, where I'm at the moment. And a big sort of marker, and I only told Mitch about this recently, it felt a weird thing to say when he first moved in. The main thing that decided when I had loads of people around to view the flat, you know, I had the room up online and loads of people applied for it. And, you know, in Dublin, it's so competitive that people give a whole little pitch about themselves and everything. And so you're trying to figure out how the fuck do I choose, you know, and it's weird to be in that position. And so for me, the kind of decider was who I got on with. And in particular, obviously, this do they seem like they'll clean or do they seem like they're lying about it? Obviously, those sorts of things happen. But I think the kind of decider on who I picked in the end was emotional intelligence. You know, I thought, who is, if there's any kind of disagreements, who is going to be able to have an adult conversation? And who am I going to be able to relate to as someone that has conversations and is constantly trying to expand their outlook? I guess I'm going to relate to someone that's like that, but I'm also probably going to get on with someone like that. And, you know, not for nothing. If they're not into emotions, self-awareness, big topics, cats, they're not going to want to live with me either. So, yeah.
Know that.
Yeah. Know where you're at with that stuff. And yeah, probably someone at a similar place. Yeah. All right. We will wrap up there. Thank you so much. This has been a delightful conversation. If people want to find you, stalk all the shows you've been in. I didn't even realize till today, The Bitch in Apartment 23, you in that show. I'm going to have to rewatch. It's one of my all-time favorites.
Oh my gosh, how funny. Yeah, they can find me at Jen Marsala, two N's, on Instagram, Facebook. I think that's all I do. I should be TikToking, right? Everybody's doing that. Should I be TikToking? Twitter. Do Twitter.
I'm the wrong person to ask. I do nearly no social media. Love people to follow me. Do they get any content? No, they have to subscribe to the pod. This is where I belong.
I'm not great at it, but do follow me because I always post when I'm on shows, both in stand-up and TV. And also, it's nice when nice people follow you and you can also see what they're up to. So
yeah, absolutely. I recently had a couple that do speed dating events here in Dublin follow me, and now they've reached out and they want to be on the pod. So yeah.
And also, will you be doing speed dating?
I would like to. I think there's something that feels very, very slightly nefarious about going there as research for an episode. So I think I try the speed dating after we've recorded that together.
Yeah,
I just go as a research trip. Also, I mean, not for nothing, it's probably quite nice to go and just observe the first time, and then the next time I'll really know what I'm in for. So,
Well, I don't think you're supposed to know what you're in for. I think you dive in head first with speed dating, don't you?
You're right. But yeah, it'd be real awkward if they're like, so what brought you here? And I'm like, I have a research podcast about dating. I don't normally want to tell somebody about that on a first date, because they're like, you're going to talk about me, aren't you? And I'm like, only if you're horrible to me. Only if there's a grim story here.
That'll keep them on their best behavior.
Yeah, like a bit of emotional blackmail. Yep, that works. All right. Thanks again, Jan.
Thank you so much. It's great talking
Thanks
to you.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damaged by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.